Mr. Gay Wan Gui, Real 19. Mr. Gui, you mentioned the various heads of the departments. Could you tell us what were their duties and responsibilities as head of a department?
Well, it was obvious that they had to see that the departments were run in the proper way. But actually, they didn't have to worry. As I said already, that the people who went there were very senior civil servants who were working for the Singapore government in the civil service before. So when they went there, they were quite certain that the various departments would be run on the same efficient lines as they were then when in Singapore.
So what was their main function?
The main function was to take care of the sanitary aspect, the planning and construction, roads, proper drainage, construction of temporary transit settlements for the people, clearing of the lands and burning of the virgin jungles first, so that the settlers would find it much easier to do the final clearing to till the land, and the surveyors to see that the lands are properly surveyed and allocated, and the deeds were drawn up so that ownership could be properly claimed. And the people were ascertained of the things that they would like to do, you see. If they like to do farming of certain crops, they would get adequate advice what exactly what to do. And advice was freely given by the agricultural department. And if they didn't know how to do it, they would come and demonstrate. Or they could go to their agricultural station to see how the things were actually done. In fact, it was really very easy for ignoramus, or rather beginner, to learn a lot about farming.
So planning, policy making and decisions were all done by the heads of the departments?
Yes.
Were they the people who were personally involved in seeing that all these were being implemented?
That I wouldn't know. They would come occasionally, as I said, to see and hold meetings to hear progress reports of the work being done. As I said, traveling for these important people, especially accompanied by Japanese, would be a risky affair at best. And so they would come rather infrequently or when absolutely necessary.
All the heads of departments were not stationed in Andau?
Oh, no. No, you wouldn't see them there. First of all, the accommodation would not be suitable for them.
Do you remember how many times they visited the Andau settlement while you were there?
Actually, I have no idea. I did meet Mr. Hootkat once because I had a land complaint to make once. I was allocated land wrongly as regards area. One third of my land area was taken away by the paper mill, and I wanted the third back, which unfortunately has been developed to some extent by the paper mills. And he arbitrated and compensated me with, if I remember rightly, $800. I had to accept it because on the advice of my friends, it was useless, futile, not to do it. And I was given another extra piece if I wanted. But I had so much land which I couldn't manage that I was quite satisfied to take the $800.
Did it happen that he was there, or did he go out purposely to listen to all these cases?
That I wouldn't know. I think he did not go out purposely. He just happened to be there and called for cases and complaints to hear them.
What were your impressions of these heads, these organizers?
Oh, they are practically the heads of the Chinese community in Singapore. They are the hub of the dynamic force in the economic life of Singapore. Even in those days, the Chinese Association, the business community, and therefore Endow was from the very beginning bound to succeed. We had the finance, we had the brains, organizing ability, and Helio was not exactly possible, barring interference from the anti-Japanese or the communists or any other natural disasters. It must have come out all right. Eh?
What did you think of the role of these people that you have mentioned in the Endow settlement?
Their role, I mean, the work
their efforts in bringing about the Endow settlement.
They made a good effort, but they. We, together with Mr. Shinozaki, had only one purpose, and that was to save as many Chinese as possible from the dreaded Kampeitai, to save as many Chinese lives as possible, because things were getting rather hot and troublesome for those who loved freedom and liberty. And for quite a number of educated people, and you shouldn't be surprised to see educated people, people holding degrees up to PhD, holding chankos and cultivating the soil. Unsuspectingly, you might touch Dr. Leong, who is a PhD in chemistry, digging a potato patch. I don't know whether he's still alive. He was a lecturer in Singapore. And educated people going out in the fields in the best clothes, best dressed like you are now, carrying baskets full of earth or pieces of wood they have cut from the forest, or carrying potato cuttings we planted, rice seedlings. These sites were common. So it was obvious that the people who went there were not all poor people. They were educated middle class people, people who wanted to get away from the terrors of Japanese occupation.
Was this attitude very common among all the settlers, that the Endow settlement was to save the Chinese from the Japanese in Singapore?
I suppose it was a general attitude, but it was never expressed explicitly. You could feel that when they went there, everybody behaved in a very friendly manner towards each other. In fact, there was no envy, no hate, no sort of jealousy. Everybody tried to help everybody, advising, assisting. Suppose you are short of something, you want to just ask. You've got to ask. And what I have now, I give to you. Later, I'll be short of something else. If you have in excess, you give to me when I ask them from you. See? There's full cooperation. And information is given quite freely. Of course, secret information. Information that might prove dangerous, it reaches Quislings or Japanese stooges would be scarcely whispered, but some other spread around. That sort of thing, you see. It's all, everything is done for the protection of the status of ourselves.
Do you know what were the attitudes of the settlers towards the organizers? What did they think of them?
Oh, we realized that they were trying to do their best. And the fact was that even Mr. Shinozaki was highly respected. He was a Japanese. That he, on one or two occasions when he brought a few Japanese friends along, they too were respected. There was not that animosity. I believe they realized that he was quite sincere in his desire to help the Japanese, to help the Chinese, I mean.
What about the local Chinese leaders who were the organizers of this Endow settlement? How did the settlers themselves think of them?
What mean the local leaders?
The Chinese, the heads of the various departments.
Well, they are, first of all, they were civil servants. First of all, I suppose they continued in their various occupations and paid by the government of sorts. You were regarded as some sort of government servants, that just like teachers were paid from funds, government funds, I suppose. And they did it partly from duty, but I think largely because they realized that the success of the department, of the settlement, depended on their doing the job well. That this was something new and they had to do it properly.
How did the organizers, when they visited Endow, how did they treat the people?
Oh, on a very friendly basis. There was no question of government servant bureaucratic manner towards the public like that, you know. I mean, just like friends and so on. Come on, let's do this work like this, and then you'll come together. They come down and see how the work is done. Even then, a helping hand. You couldn't recognize who they were. They were practically just the same way.
Since these people were not staying in Endow settlement itself, who did they get to run the departments at the administrative building for them?
Oh, no, wait a minute. Perhaps we didn't quite understand each other. You are talking about the real heads. The real heads did not come in contact with the real workers. What I mean, the in between, the heads who have delegated their jobs to the departmental officials or officers. These are the people who do the work. See?
So you were saying that these departmental officers were the ones who treated the people very well?
Yes, they stay there practically all the time. They are there, their presence are there, is there all the time.
So these were the ones appointed by the...
By the heads, various heads.
To run the...
For the mess.
Who were these people?
Pardon?
Who were these departmental officers?
Well, I can't remember their names very well. Perhaps a few. John Ten, Chen Zhenji, Mr. Lau, and a few others. I've forgotten their names.
Were there family members there as well?
Some of them had their families. Some were bachelors.
Did you know what these people were doing before they went to Endow?
Most of them were civil servants in the various same departments.
all of them were English speaking.
Yes, with a few bilingual people, biased towards Chinese education. For example, the one in the supply department and construction department, contractors and so on.
Did these department officers employ any of the settlers to help them run the departments?
Of course, they had their clerks and people whom they needed. Either on a part-time or full-time basis, I wouldn't know.
They were all from the settlers?
Settlers. They were all from the settlers. And perhaps there were a few Malays who helped in the anti-malarial jobs, which the settlers wouldn't do, you see. They're not so used to handling those oiling machines for oiling the streams and so forth.
Do you remember whether these departments were run on normal working hours from 9 to 5?
I don't know. I believe they were largely anti-malarial aspect. I know they were run on special occasions when there was some extraordinary outbreak of mosquitoes, infestation, that sort of thing. Or whenever specialized work had to be done.
Who was the one responsible for security and discipline in the settlement?
There was an officer. There was a one of these men, and he delegated the job to the name is right at the tip of my tongue, but I can't remember. He is the chief of security there, and I think he was one of those who was shot dead.
When was he shot dead?
Well, I wouldn't know the date.
What was his job before he was shot that day?
I believe his job was to see that there was no interference of communist elements and such things and so on. And I believe he must have done something to endanger the movements of the anti-Japanese people. Otherwise, they wouldn't have killed him right in front of everybody. He was one of those people who was riddled with bullets, machine gun right in public. A squad of these people came out and asked everybody to lie down flat, and one of them just opened fire and riddled him right across his middle.
What was the impression of these men?
What do you mean by impression?
What did you think of him when he was...
No, we had practically nothing to do with him except that we knew that he was one of the privileged, that he was doing something, some other, for the authorities. That we better keep toe the line and keep within the law or rule of the settlement. See? Otherwise, we would get into trouble.
Was he, for instance, very arrogant or went about?
He must have been arrogant to some people. Otherwise, they wouldn't have done. Shot him in front of his family. Yeah?
After he was shot dead, did anyone else take over his job?
Obviously, somebody must have taken over. No place or position would be left vacant. Somebody would come up and take the place.
How was the security in the settlement besides the fact that the anti-Japanese elements came into the settlement?
No, it was very good. I mean, there was practically no robbery, no stealing, no mugging, and no nothing violent ever happened. It was just this matter: you keep out of this anything that concerns the communists or the Japanese or anything political. And of course, there were occasions when, if you sold things, you've got to keep our eyes open. Do not let them rush you and take your things without paying. Now, if you catch them, all right, you catch them, the neighbors will ask them to pay for what they've taken. That's about all. You have nobody to complain to, you see. And out of shame, they would pay, because everybody would know him. But besides that sort of thing, there was nothing to be afraid of. There was no violence or serious crime.
Were there any problems between settlers, like, for instance, fights or quarrels or disagreements?
No, except domestic quarrels. You could hear us. Domestic quarrels, yeah, which is, I suppose, quite normal. Besides that, people were too busy and tired to have energy to argue or quarrel very much.
Yeah. Earlier you mentioned Mr. G.H. Kiat and a few of his colleagues were listening to some cases. What kind of cases were these?
No, cases not criminal or that sort of case, I think. I mean, cases of supply, cases of rationing, cases of, the ability to do what they set out to do, you see? Sometimes a settler gets a piece of land, he doesn't know what to do, he says, you give me a piece of land like this, I cannot plant on this kind of land. What do you expect me to do? You expect me to starve. Now, it's difficult, you know. Even the agriculture department doesn't know what to do with that piece of land. Experienced farmers look at the piece of land and shake their heads. You see, by the time you finish the land, the war might be over. Because the tree trunks, after being burnt down, are still crisscrossed. And it will take you a lot of time to burn them and cut them off and flatten them and turn out the land, expose the land to the sun and weed the land and so on. So all these problems, they send, and of course you refer this matter to this department, you refer this matter to this department. And some people complain that the paddy field would have no water. They ask, why is there no water? Well, look, your paper mill is using the water, and this paddy field gets dry. The paper mill has drained my water out. And then again, the construction agriculture department put their heads together, got to. There's a lot of some problems, small ones, and he just listens to them. And question of unfair allocation, that kind of thing, rationing. Some people coming in without proper registration, maybe. All sorts, you see. There are bound to be problems of that kind when you have about 10,000 people around.
These settlers, what sort of background were they from, mainly? You mentioned the intellectuals.
Yeah, intellectuals, and they were from all sorts of backgrounds. They're friends and their relatives. A lot of Chinese educated. All sorts. You can see that there's a whole range of the Chinese society, actually. But not the very poor and down and out, definitely. Not the very poor and down and out. But yes, about Mr. GHK and so on, one of his main worry is the constant watch of the settlement being turned into a nest of anti-Japanese activities. Because if this sort of thing happens and the Japanese come in and begin to clamp down, then there will be trouble for everybody. Once you suspect that the settlement and the communists have some agreement or something, are working together, things might be serious. So all these things, if they are heard of and so on, I suppose he wants to know the reason why and clamp down on them and extinguish the source immediately so that the fire wouldn't spread.
Did he have to deal with such a case?
That I wouldn't know.
The cases and the problems that he listened to, did you know whether these were generally solved by him?
I believe the thing must have reached between him and Mr. Shinozaki. He must have reached Mr. Shinozaki, who is the highest authority for the settlement. So much so that he realized the danger, and as I said, he admitted finally to one simple solution: to contact the anti-Japanese army and tell them this settlement is to save your own people. Don't you come and cause trouble here. The slightest trouble might be misunderstood, and when the Japanese army or Kempeitais move in, they can cause a lot of loss of lives and misery. You don't do that. We give you whatever you want. You are short of rice, all right. Every month we give you so much, but it's all between you and me. So that's what he has been doing. And even his own Japanese army doesn't know it. If his own superiors knew it, he, a Japanese, would at once be shot. Because he would be a traitor, you know. But he liked the Chinese so much that he took the risk and to save us the settlement. So that was the main worry.
Cases like unfair allocation or a poor piece of land, were there a lot of discontentment over this, or did Mr. Kidd manage to solve all these
problems? Oh yes, they're quite easily solved. Yeah. Because there was very little quarrel. Actually, some people went there, they were just quite satisfied to settle down there and said, well, we'll ride over this 2 or 3 year period. Quite easily, you see. With whatever reserve we have, and with the rice ration that we have got, and small vegetable plot that we have planted.
How was the atmosphere in the settlement like? Were there a lot of complaints or grumbles?
No, there were no complaints, because the people who went there were well aware what they were facing. And they, of course, had news of what was happening in Singapore from relatives who once in a week came up to visit. They were allowed visitors to tell them the misery of the people who were left behind. So when they were comparing what they were having at the settlement and how their relatives were